What we're really experiencing is an extraordinary level of vibrancy in the tech space, driven by probably a decade of infrastructure and computing or architectures being put in place that are now really coming together.
That's David Crawford, a partner in Bain's Silicon Valley office and head of our global technology practice. Today on the show, David and I will look at what's driving tech valuations to record heights.
What we're seeing is a reflection of entire industries being disrupted and moved into a more remote cloud-based delivery model. And that is just turning out to be extremely, extremely valuable. And I think it has long legs to run from here.
I'm Hugh MacArthur, head of Bain's Global Private Equity Practice. And this is Dry Powder. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Hugh.
I'm glad you came by today because been hearing a lot about tech. It's the number one sector for private equity due diligence that we've been doing at Bain for the last 6 or 7 years. And that seems to only be increasing in 2020. Multiples tend to be very high compared to some other industry sectors. What are you seeing in our recent deal data and recent transactions in the space? And is there any sign of relief from these kinds of unprecedented heights in multiple?
Well, Hugh, this is a difference in perspective that you and I have shared. I think you say the multiples are high. I spend my career helping to make those multiples as high as possible. So I guess I think less about them needing relief and more just making sure my clients are on the right side of history of those multiples.
So from the tech investor's perspective, you could be part of the problem here.
That's right. Part of the problem or the solution, as long as you can make those multiples higher.
Well, let me ask you a question then that's got to be on every tech investor's mind these days. Is this a bubble or are there bubbles inside of the tech space that you see?
Yeah, I think in terms of the classic definition of a bubble where assets are clearly overvalued based on inappropriate information and so forth, I think the answer is probably no. I don't feel a sense of hysteria about specific business models. I don't feel a sense of poor information flow and so forth. I think what we're seeing right now is a pretty fair valuation that just really reflects an extraordinary level of innovation and vibrancy in the tech sector. And the real trick is to make sure that investors, both yours and my shareholders, are finding a way to be on the right side of history, to be the companies that are doing well within the sector that is very disrupted and vibrant.
Well, you've certainly been winning the war on absolute multiple numbers, David, in terms of them going up, because we really are seeing them at eye-watering levels. But I've always felt throughout my career in private equity that multiples are a function of relative value. And so the absolute number actually doesn't mean all that much. You can buy something for a very inexpensive multiple, but if half the EBITDA is gone in a year, then you've just doubled your price. And similarly, we're seeing, as you reflected, so many strong trends and so many incredible growth projections in the technology space that while the numbers themselves seem shockingly high as multiples, as a function of relative value on the table, if you've underwritten things appropriately, you can make a very nice return in the tech space by paying the right number. It certainly does increase the risk level, and you need to be as certain as you possibly can be that the growth is going to be there and that the opportunities for value creation are going to be there. But if they are, we've seen some tremendous financial results from private investment into the tech space over the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I tend to agree. That said, I don't think that means that we're not subject to disruptions. I just think that the disruptions are likely to come from non-traditional sources. Three that are on our clients' minds would be the cloud service provider business model is actually now become so prevalent and so concentrated that if we saw deep re-regulation or breakup strategies or whatnot to the largest cloud service providers, I think that would lead to a sector-wide revaluation. Likewise, the East versus West trade tensions, it's one of the few issues that both Democrats and Republicans agree on. I could see East-West tensions flaring up here and there and causing significant revaluation events. And then the last one I think that I've shared with you before is just cybersecurity. We are so visible to one another through our use of phones, our use of data, and that's been wonderful for innovation, communication, idea sharing, but it also creates an environment in which I think we have yet to have a significant global security event where nation states get involved. And so that would be another event that I think could lead us to a path of a significant revaluation in the tech sector.
So David, what I hear you saying is that there are a lot of secular trends that are going to tend to have legs that will drive and propel many subsectors of tech forward over time. And there are also some macro issues to consider that could cause disruption in some of those trends. So there are a lot of things at a high level to take into account as a private equity investor. What I'd like to double click on now is to get more granular about what does investment look like in the tech space by subsector? Because I know I've seen pictures that obviously the GDP, thinking about tech in GDP terms, is not exactly where private investment goes. What is the deal activity look like in your mind at the subsector level? Where is it hottest?
So I think software is alive and well. I don't see that radically changing. In fact, the COVID pandemic has really driven some pretty rapid evolutions to the enterprise software and infrastructure base. And so that's created more targets. It'll create more assets, more availability. I think enterprise tech in general is going to be a strained sector for some time, both because of the long-term sectoral trend towards cloud service provider-based business models and because of the acceleration effect we felt through COVID. And so I think there will be a need to redirect investment dollars. And I think the private equity partners are actually great at helping management teams do that well. I think in the venture world, it's more vibrant. Like I said earlier, we are looking at probably, at least in my career, 25 years in the tech sector. I haven't seen this level of kind of recombinant innovation, and we're just seeing a lot of new businesses. So in the venture space, I think it's the sectors you'd expect. It's cloud continuing. It's AI using neural nets as something that has found just very broad applications, and we're really just seeing the beginning of that. And I think more broadly, analytics, companies that are doing analytics, I think are just really interesting business models.
So David, in the global private equity report that we released in March of this year, we noted that about 70% of all private equity buyout investment is in the enterprise technology space. And in three primary areas that we highlighted were enterprise software, DevOps, and cyber. In fact, just this morning, we just found out that several of our large private equity clients are requiring cyber audits for all of their portfolio companies every single year in order to make sure that they're playing defense appropriately as investors. And I wonder if you have any commentary more broadly about what's going on in those three spaces that attracts private equity investment.
Well, those make good sense to me, Hugh. The cybersecurity is just becoming more and more important. As you're sharing data, sharing files, sharing activity, you just have to make sure that those are not falling into the wrong hands. And security is a very unique industry in that it doesn't consolidate into a single player. You know, it ends up constantly fragmenting. And so there's just an enormous amount of room for investment in niche and new approaches. The thesis of aggregating all the security companies into one big monolith has just never really materialized. You know, I think the enterprise software one, I perceive that as the direct result of a maturing business model where leveraged buyout business model is really perfect. There's a lot of longevity in those. There's a lot of switching costs. They're often very low ROI to change out of those things. And there's a playbook for improving the operations that we've worked and honed with clients for 20 years. And so they're just beautiful, beautiful targets for private equity investing. And then DevOps is a little different. To me, DevOps is a trend that is sort of a no-brainer as the development of software moves from a more predictive future and a very structured release to one that is much more based on agile development and continuous release, you know. And so in that world, we're finding ways to just radically improve the end user experience by changing the internal operations. And I think that's cutting across the entire base of software companies.
David, you mentioned COVID a couple of times, and I'd like to go deeper into COVID and how that's impacted tech trends in the tech space. You mentioned an acceleration of some existing trends. Where are you seeing that? And have you seen entirely new trends that have actually been started during the pandemic period?
Yeah, Hugh. By March, we had started a really regular cadence of speaking with CIOs and tabulating their points of view. So we have kind of very good cross-sectional year-long data from a couple hundred CIOs. And the answers were unambiguous. They evolved a little, but the clear answer we were getting through the COVID dip was we're going to move more to the cloud, we're going to variabilize our cost structure, and we'll handle the uncertainty that way. Now, as time passed, we also asked them at each step how much of this change in budget posture is temporary versus permanent. You're going to stay there, you know, in 2021 and 2022. And most of them said fairly early that they thought the movement to the cloud was going to be a one-way trip, that it wouldn't be a management of the downturn kind of strategy. As time has passed, they've become more convinced in that answer. So I think a lot got moved, and there isn't a snapback coming. It's basically going to stay on that trajectory.
You know, David, recently we saw Zoom shares drop by 20% after a successful vaccine trial. I think many of us were kind of getting used to the notion that sitting at home and working from home for many industries, at least, was going to be more of a quasi-permanent trend than perhaps the stock market might be indicating. Do you think it's possible we're going to see a mass migration of folks back to the traditional office environment?
Yeah, interesting question. I think it's important to keep all of these COVID developments in perspective. Maybe the biggest surprise is we've proven to ourselves that you can do a lot more this way than we maybe thought. You know, you and I talk regularly in a way that to me is seamless. It doesn't make a lot of sense if we know each other already to get onto airplanes. I had a number of sort of CEO meetings last week where, you know, these are in other continents. We had 2-3 hour discussions. Finished the meeting. No one had jet lag. No one was exhausted. And those were effective meetings. They didn't really feel like a compromise. Now, you lose the benefit of having dinner and building social bonds and so forth. But we have to remember that remote work has its downsides. Most of the clients that we're talking to will say that working this way draws down social capital that has been built up over the years. It's hard also to manage a remote workforce in some job types. I do think that there is a global workforce that would like to move back to on-premise work. So we'll find our balance point in the coming months.
It's a fascinating question, this notion of balance, the balance of increased productivity and the loss of face-to-face meetings. Let's think about a workforce that's traditionally depended a lot on those face-to-face meetings to be successful, the sales team, particularly in a B2B sense. How are they using tech to close a deal today? And where do you think the balance is of face-to-face versus productivity going forward with things like B2B sales?
Yeah, great question. The economics are clear. If you can move things to inside sales, it's a radically lower cost method of making the sale. But there's always been well-founded counterargument that says you just can't substitute field sales. You know, it needs to be there. One of the gifts I think that COVID gave us was an experiment that pushed us much further along that dimension than we ever thought possible or that a change-resistant sales organization would ever try. We've learned that a lot more can be done through inside sales than you think, which I think creates opportunities for private equity shops. I think it creates an opportunity to really experiment with what that right balance point is. And for those who figure out how to do it well, and there is some doing to do, you know, to keep those relationships healthy and so forth. You can do that remotely, but it's a different process. It's not the same thing.
So it sounds like there are ways to thread the needle and maintain the benefit of having less jet lag.
I think so. I hope so.
On the next episode of Dry Powder, David will teach us that clouds aren't just about the weather.
It's not an exaggeration to say that the single most important innovative force in the tech sector today is the cloud service provider. And there's a handful of 6 or 8 of those companies that really are driving and setting the tone.
If you'd like to take a deeper dive into Bain's 2020 technology report, email us at drypowder@bain.com. I'm Hugh MacArthur. Thank you for listening.